Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Well, the NCAA Women's Basketball National Championship game has come and gone, and as anybody could have predicted, viewership down dramatically from a year ago, but still one of the top audiences for women's basketball in recent memory, and that is where we will lead off the new edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, anywhere you get your podcasts. So let's just dive on into the big topic of the week, which is viewership for the NCAA National Championships of Men's and Women's College Basketball. And we'll start with the women, because that is the biggest story. Viewership for the UConn-South Carolina game on Sunday down dramatically, 54% from last year's record audience of 18.9 million for Caitlin Clark in Iowa against South Carolina. And ultimately, obviously, that's the story for a lot of people. They will look and they'll say, the proof of the Caitlin Clark effect. People were only watching for Caitlin Clark, and as soon as she left, viewership tanked. Well, yes, viewership did tank. I mean, 54% is tanking, but for women's college basketball, 8.6 million viewers is still one of the biggest audiences you could ever possibly imagine for this sport. And to me, the test is if you went back 3 years ago, the last time UConn and South Carolina met in the national title game, and you said, this year's title game, South Carolina over UConn, at 4.9 million viewers on ESPN. In 3 years, it will nearly double that audience and average 8.6 million, albeit on ESPN and ABC. I think anybody associated with the sport would have taken that deal. So for me, yes, viewership declined substantially. You could say legitimately that the majority of people last year were probably tuning in primarily because of Caitlin Clark, and they did not tune back in this year. But the excess audience that Caitlin Clark brought in those 2 years in the national title game was so massive that you don't need to keep all of them or even half of them in order for it to be a humongous benefit for a sport that, I want to remind everybody, 4 years ago was celebrating an audience of 4 million for the title game, Stanford over Arizona. And Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, this is a win for women's basketball, for college basketball. It's a win for ESPN. We are a long way away from UConn, Oklahoma in 2002, getting about 5.7 million viewers. And that was a high number for a while, a mark that we didn't know would be surpassed. But obviously that's happened. And that's a good thing. It means that the sport has some staying power. Of course, not at the level, not at Caitlin Clark levels, but that should have never been the expectation. As you and I have clearly established on this podcast, Caitlin Clark was a phenomenon, a marvel in college basketball, and is still that now in the WNBA. But what you have here, this number, despite the fact that UConn controlled the game and just dominated South Carolina in a way that was almost just shocking if you weren't keeping up with UConn and South Carolina throughout the season, because UConn did blow South Carolina out earlier in the year. But to be in a championship game environment, you do expect a closer game, especially considering the fact that the two teams had already met earlier this year. But given that piece, and to still get a almost 9 million viewers, I think it speaks to the constant continuous growth, the upward trend women's college basketball is on. And even though you're not going to get to Caitlin Clark heights, the fact that you got this number with a blowout speaks to the fact that women's college basketball is in a really healthy place.
Yeah, and I mean, I would also point out viewership down pretty modestly from 2 years ago, LSU over Iowa, which at the time was a shockingly high number, nearly 10 million viewers for that game. Now, obviously, out-of-home viewing has expanded just earlier this year, so that obviously plays a role in that margin being so narrow. But, you know, when all is said and done, I mean, to get that close to LSU-Iowa for a game that was not good, and I mean, it was not good. That is pretty impressive. It was a statement number. You know, you talk about statement games. I think this was a statement viewership number for the women's game. It says, we have staying power. Okay. We are not going back to, you know, 2022 or 2021. You know, this is for us. We're going to be in that 8-9 million viewer range from here on out. And if that's where it lands, okay, that'll be half of what they got at the highest level, so be it. You know, outliers are wonderful for people who are not honest brokers, because then they can just compare to the outlier all the time and act like they have something there. That's why every single article about the NBA from some corners compares the viewership to 1998 or 1993 or 2012. You know, those are years, if you look at the history of the NBA's viewership, those are peaking years, right? You know, if you look at any comparison to, you know, 2003, it would be a heck of a lot more flattering, but you're not going to see those, right? So obviously going forward, 2024 for women's college basketball will always be the year that viewership is compared to say, hey, look, this sport isn't popular, it's tanking. I mean, the reality is, women's college basketball, women's basketball in general, will never be as popular, probably anyway, as it was when Caitlin Clark was there. Same thing with Michael Jordan and the NBA. Same thing with, you know, obviously figure skating and Nancy and Tanya. I mean, there's just certain stories, certain athletes, the bar is just set impossibly high. But right now, I would say the women's game is as healthy as it's ever been.
Can't help but wonder, would the number be any different if the game were on at 5 p.m. or 5:30 or 6 p.m.? I mean, 3 p.m. for a national championship game on a Sunday Eastern time, of course, is just a weird time slot. It is. And we've talked about that a bit on this podcast, but I can't help but wonder how much more of an audience is women's college basketball missing out on by not having ABC place that game at a better time slot. But even with that, to get the kind of game you got, and that's the key, this game was not close. UConn dominated completely, thoroughly. I mean, a thorough beatdown of South Carolina. And with all of that in mind, and then the 3 o'clock time slot, to have all of those factors come into play and still get nearly 9 million viewers, I think is an extraordinarily encouraging sign for women's college basketball.
No doubt. And to your question, think about the men's tournament. How often does the 3 o'clock game on Sunday do better than the 5 o'clock game? How often does the early Elite Eight window do better than the late Elite Eight window? And yeah, some of that is CBS is obviously reserving the best matchups for that 5 o'clock slot, but it's not entirely that. You're going to get more viewers at 5 than at 3. And just period. You know, there's a reason why when the NBA was on NBC, Michael Jordan got the 5:30 slot, not 3 o'clock slot. And Shaq and Kobe got the 5:30 slot, not 3 o'clock slot. So, you know, ABC, I don't know what their reasons are. Their reasons aren't good enough. I know that without even knowing what the reasons are. If it's some kind of executive in the entertainment division who's overly protective of a, frankly, fairly weak Sunday night lineup. I know American Idol is obviously their iconic show, but we're not talking about 2010 American Idol here that was just running roughshod over everything else on TV. You know, to me, the other thing too is if you want to protect American Idol, no better way to do that than to give it a direct lead-in from live sports. It's madness what they're doing over there. But You know, hey, 3 o'clock is a good enough time slot to still draw well, but you're not going to draw nearly as well as you could otherwise.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
All right, let's move on to the men's national title game. And of course, this was a classic Florida and Houston, down to the wire, weird ending, but ultimately a very closely contested game, as I think a lot of people expected once you saw the excellent Final Four games on Saturday. So more than 18 million viewers, actually fewer viewers than last year's women's game with Iowa and South Carolina, but still an absolutely massive audience, the biggest for men's college basketball since 2019. Obviously, out-of-home viewing, you know the story by now. Highest-rated men's college basketball game since 2021. And 2021, you might not realize this, everybody, was 4 years ago. It's a four-year high, and your highest since 2021. So it's not solely out-of-home viewing. That game did do genuinely well, and up substantially from last year when the ratings were in the sevens. So, look, hey, great number, and that is without a blue blood. That is without Duke. That is without Kentucky. That is without Calipari. Florida and Houston are teams with histories, teams with pedigree, but they are not blue bloods. And Houston, for a long time, was a mid-major, right? Houston, yeah, with Drexler and Olajuwon, it was a big team, but much more recently, it was in the AAC. What was it that Kelvin Sampson referred to it as, the poodle conference, something like that, the other day? So, I mean, it was not a big-time conference that they were in. And, hey, Florida, look, Florida obviously won two national titles in a row in the 2000s, made it to a Final Four in 2014. But realistically, you know, Florida is a heck of a lot closer to Florida State and Miami in this sport than it is to Duke and Kentucky. So to get that kind of number for that game, I think pretty good. More than pretty good. Excellent. And very encouraging for the future of basketball viewership, which on the men's side has not yet fully recovered from COVID.
Yeah, this was great. The Final Four was thrilling. Both games on Saturday, thrilling. Monday night's game, thrilling. It just goes to show you, you and I have talked about this a bit. People want to watch A, games that matter, B, games that are entertaining, C, games that have close finishes. You put those ingredients together, we got all of that this weekend. Florida, Auburn, just thrilling. Houston, Duke, my goodness, captivating. And I do think that there was some momentum from particularly the Houston, Duke game because people wanted to see, is this Houston team that just beat Duke? Because a lot of casual fans don't know players. They know brands. They know names. They know teams. And so when you find out that a team like Houston beats Duke, you then say, can they win it all? Let me see what's going on with this Houston team. Or somebody could even say, Houston's in the national championship? I remember Phi Slamma Jamma. Let me see what's going on there. Oh, Florida's in the national championship. Remember Joakim Noah, the guy that used to dance around with Vern Lundquist and Bill Raftery back in the day, about 20 years ago. What's going on with them now? So you put those ingredients together, and then you get this just thrilling game, not beautifully played, officiating also questionable, but you had the drama. Sports at its best, John. It's guaranteed drama. It's built in drama and tension and theater. That's what you want. That's what you want. And a heartbreaking loss for Houston, a thrilling win for Florida. That's what draws people in. I do wonder how much the 30-minute earlier start played a role. I don't know how far to dig into that. It's still too late for my taste, but I'm on the East Coast, so whatever. You're entitled to disagree with me. You've got a sweet spot there in the Midwest. But I do think that when you give people drama, when you give people theater, when you give people close matchups, and if it's a series like baseball or basketball or the NBA, you give people long series, give them a reason to care. We had reasons to be invested in this game on Monday night. And thankfully, the game did not disappoint from a drama standpoint. And when all of those things come together, it's really sports at its best. And I think that's the primary reason Florida Houston gets 19 million viewers. You don't always have to have blue bloods. I mean, Virginia Texas Tech back in 2019, you didn't have blue bloods. I know Virginia has sort of been on the rise, at least they were under Tony Bennett, but they were not Duke, Carolina, Kentucky. And that game got about 19 million viewers, did it not, John, back in 2019? So when you have close, dramatic finishes, even if the teams aren't blue bloods, but they could be well-known names, power conference names, that helps as well. But it was a great finish, captivating finish. Not at all times a great, a beautiful game, an aesthetically pleasing game, performance-wise, but you got the drama, and that's what matters the most.
No, you make excellent points. A couple of things. One, it was $19.4 million for Virginia Texas Tech, and at the time, you know, that was, I referenced it in the headline as the third least-watched title game in the past decade, but that was before COVID. COVID reset all expectations. You'll notice I don't really report things like that anymore because once you've seen the COVID era numbers, something like 19 million looks pretty good. As far as the other aspect you mentioned, the quality of play, yeah, I do think people kind of give college basketball a pretty wide berth on quality of play as compared to the NBA. People are always complaining about the quality of play in the NBA. College basketball on its best day is not as well played as an NBA game, but people go in with that expectation. So it's really never been about the best. It's been about competitive basketball, not high quality basketball. And in fact, the errors seem to almost help the fact that these players are kids, you know, the humanity of them that we saw at the end of the game. I would even compare college basketball in terms of what people expect in terms of quality of play to Little League. You know, there's no lunatic sitting down in their home watching Little League complaining about the quality of play, right? So it's similar to that. You're not expecting the best basketball, but you are expecting competitive basketball. That is definitely true. And it can't be too bad as well. Even if your expectations are low, Houston, Tennessee the other day went below it. The other aspect too with Houston, you mentioned, you know, Phi Slamma Jamma, remembering that. Like I said, they haven't really been a blue blood, but that Phi Slamma Jamma team, there was a whole documentary about them on ESPN. So that could also be another factor. But what I really want to get to is something that you brought up that I hadn't even thought about, didn't even mention it in my article, was the earlier start time. Kind of forgot that game started earlier Obviously, a half hour earlier is not insignificant. And the fact that that game did so well, despite airing a half hour earlier than usual, that's the nail in the coffin for 9:20 p.m. You'll never see that start time again. You might even see them test out an earlier start. Because if you can get 18.1 million with a game that starts at 8:50, well, what can you get for a game that starts at 8:30, 8:20? You know, the reality is the late starts of the 90s. So the NBA Finals at 9, Monday Night Football every single week at 9. You know, they made sense at the time because I think the networks wanted to put entertainment programming on. They didn't want to cede the whole night to sports. You know, when NBC was airing the NBA Finals at 9, it wasn't airing a pregame show at 8. It was airing Dateline. You know, and Monday Night Football did do, I think, a show called Monday Night Blast. Remember this? Monday Night Blast, I think it was called, with Berman. But for the most part, I think Monday Night Football aired, ABC aired regular programming into Monday Night Football. I think they might have aired like My Wife and Kids, or I don't know. I don't know what they were airing back then.
I think I remember some moments when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire would lead into Monday Night Football, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me on that, but I seem to recall.
Well, I'm not sure about that. But considering how big Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was, it was probably outdrawing Monday Night Football as well back then. You know, people forget the NFL's ratings back in the early 2000s were not dramatically better than anything else on TV. So, you know, I think those late start times from those days are a bit of an artifact from a different time. I think obviously you don't want to start so early that people on the West Coast aren't home. But I think you can get away with 8 o'clock flat. I don't think that's really a problem in terms of viewership. Now, you get into 7, maybe. And I do think the other thing, too, you know, college football's national title game, people have kind of not noticed. It's been starting at 7:30 the last several years. So we're seeing a trend toward these earlier start times, and they're not negatively impacting the ratings. So I think we'll see that continue.
Yeah, I do wonder if this sort of encourages the NCAA and CBS or WBD to move the championship game maybe to an 8:30 or an 8:15, an 8:20. It just felt better. I mean, now that I think about it, there was something about it that just made more sense. And it's been a complaint for a while, but it's been past 9 o'clock for that championship game for many, many years, right, John? I mean, even back in the 80s, was it that late back in the 80s as well?
Back into the 70s.
Yeah. So a long time, but once again, trends change, people's viewing habits change, they adjust, they adapt, and kudos for an earlier start time. And, you know, now that we've sort of talked it out, it would be difficult to argue that that earlier time did not play some role. I think I saw from someone on Twitter, and I want to give credit, but it escapes me at the moment, but they were talking about how the game ended much earlier, just a little bit after 11 o'clock versus last year when the game ended close to midnight. That makes a difference, man. People go to bed. People go to sleep. People get ready for work. So kudos for the earlier start time. And you have to believe that it did play a factor in the encouraging number Florida Houston drew.
Yeah, let's be completely clear here. When the World Series with that the Cubs won, that game 7 against Cleveland, when it went to extra innings, the final quarter hour declined from the peak quarter hour, right? Because even for game 7 of the World Series between the Cubs and the Indians and, you know, all of the drama, extra innings, people are going to go to bed. There's a point where people are just going to go to bed. So the reality is that when you're talking about start times, you know, probably better to start earlier and everyone can at least see the end than it is to start later so that everyone can see the beginning. I think the end is where the viewership builds anyway. And we see it with the NBA Finals now at 8:30, college basketball 8:50, and they can go earlier than that. They can go earlier than that, I think. 7 is the limit. You go to 7, you might start to see some impact. All right, so ultimately, great weekend for men's and women's college basketball. Obviously, the men's tournament reestablishing its dramatic advantage over the women's and a gap of 10 million viewers for the men's and women's. While we're on the subject of programming, I was thinking to myself, I mentioned this last week, the fact that the women can't get that later start time on Sundays. We talked just now about the men having this, the late start times improved this year. If you do Friday, Sunday for the men, you can just have a 5 o'clock Sunday start for the men's title game, or 7 o'clock Sunday, which would just entirely in prime time. That might be worth considering for the future while the women get, the idea that I actually have, and I don't know how workable it is, men have their semifinals on Friday. Women have their semifinals on Sunday afternoon at like 1 and 3:30 on ABC. Men have their final that night at like 7 o'clock on CBS. And it's like a super Saturday of the US Open, if you remember that. Kind of a version of that for the tournament. Women's semifinals and men's finals on the same day. I kind of like that idea. The only issue is you wouldn't have any games on Saturday or any games on Monday because the women would inevitably have to play on Tuesday. But just something that I was thinking about as a potential, programming play. All right, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about some of the other things going on in sports media this week. And we're taping Wednesday evening, not too long after Andrew Marchand of The Athletic reported that Major League Baseball could look into selling rights to MLB.tv as part of its upcoming media rights negotiations. This was an interesting one to me because based on the Marchand report, which was a little murky, I don't know if you had a chance to read this, but it was kind of, it wasn't necessarily straightforward to me. Reading between the lines, it seems to me like MLB would be wanting to use MLB.tv in this negotiation for the ESPN rights that are going to expire after this season as a way to sweeten those rights. That, to me, is a crazy thing to do. And it also points to MLB being in a position of weakness. Because if they have to add MLB.tv to the existing ESPN rights package in order to get sufficient money from that deal, one, it validates ESPN. They're clearly overpaying if MLB has to throw MLB.tv in. And two, it's just MLB devaluing its product again, because there's no way you're going to get enough money to justify the sale of MLB.tv exclusively to one partner in a short-term deal where there's no certainty that it will continue beyond 2028. Armand, your thoughts?
John, I'm confused. I'm confused because I'm trying to figure out, does Rob Manfred and the powers that be, do they care about making sure they're maximizing the potential they have with this league to, number one, get as much money as possible, and number two, have coverage across media partnerships be as expansive as possible? The decisions that are being made, I'm just not sure. I'm not sure what they're doing. So we were under the impression, and we had talked about it maybe a week or two ago, that Manfred seemed to maybe have softened his tone. And of course, there had been reporting out there that the door had more or less been left a bit ajar for there to be some talks between Major League Baseball and ESPN. Of course, we know that as it stands right now, this is the last year of the MLB and ESPN Sunday Night Baseball agreement, and ESPN has the wild card games as well. But I'm just not, I don't understand, John. I don't understand why MLB.tv is being used as sort of this carrot. I just don't get it. I don't understand what Rob Manfred and the powers that be, what value do they see in their product? Do they understand what they have? Because based on the decisions that I've seen and the reporting that's been out there from The Athletic and from other places and the conversations we've had, I don't know how well Rob Manfred, I don't know how what his pulse is, his finger being on the pulse of where his league is going. I don't know if he really has as strong an idea as he needs to of the value of the league that he's commissioner of. I'm not certain.
This is the man who referred to the commissioner's trophy as a hunk of metal, right? We know that there's a disconnect there. Look, MLB devaluing its rights is a story as old as time. It predates Rob Manfred. You know, what is the Baseball Network, right? And, you know, all of these things that MLB has never done national TV. Well, I shouldn't say never. MLB has not done national TV well in the past 35, 36 years.
But to jump in there, John, the Apple and Roku stuff, to me, pushes it over the top. Those two deals, you want to talk about devaluing? I mean, would we even be here if not for those two moves? Would we be at this point right now?
No, I mean, those are the original sin in this particular conflict, particularly the Roku deal, because you could get away with justifying the Apple deal. It is, you know, obviously $85 million, it's not much, but we also know, you know, that might be one of those where you take a discount just to get in bed with Apple because you think that, you know, hey, I mean, you're setting the stage for something bigger. Roku, obviously, you're not setting the stage for anything there. I mean, what else is on Roku? What else is on Roku's service? And the crazy thing is these were the rights that Peacock had, and Peacock didn't want to renew them for $30 million. That's the whole reason Roku's involved.
Yeah, it's a case of to be continued here, but it shouldn't be this way, quite frankly. I mean, simplify, and we've said this before, and if we were talking to Rob Manfred right now, we'd tell him, simplify this thing. Make sure, from a national television standpoint, keep your biggest players involved. Keep Fox in it. ESPN needs to be a part of Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball needs to be a regular part of ESPN programming. Those relationships need to continue. But some of this other stuff, trim the fat, dude. I mean, rest in peace, George Foreman. Trim the fat. Let's cut the fat here and get down to the nitty-gritty and make sure that your product, which has so much potential with the Aaron Judges and the Shohei Ohtanis of the world, there's so much potential there. Don't run the risk of jeopardizing your audience. Don't run the risk of alienating your audience by making unwise decisions. Keep it simple, man, for the good of the game. You've got great young talent out there. Make sure people know how to get to those great young baseball players. Make sure people know where they are. Don't make decisions that would hurt that.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, you know, the other thing too with MLB.TV, we have no idea who gets the rights and what kind of infrastructure do they have. We just had the outage of MLB.TV on opening day. You know, who's going to get it? And are they prepared for, you know, the tonnage? I mean, you know, obviously ESPN has distributed MLB.TV through ESPN Plus. Amazon does it now. Fubo does it now. Maybe it'll be one of those Sling. I don't know. But, you know, you got to be, you know, if you give it to Apple, can Apple handle all of that? I mean, I'm sure it can, but can it really? I mean, it's not like they have a ton of people using it all the time. And then the other aspect, too, is you are also limiting the audience for it. If you were to go with a YouTube TV and it was just like Sunday Ticket, I could see that working really well. I can see that working really well. But, you know, it also depends on who gets it. And then the other thing that MLB is going to find, what if even that isn't enough to get, you know, that price tag up to where they want it? What in the world is MLB going to do if people just aren't takers, if they're not interested? You know, you look at F1 and people just aren't interested in F1 at that price tag. And F1 does great. Every week, F1 viewership is up. But you know, the other thing that people don't seem to realize, and maybe I bear some responsibility here, ratings are literally not everything. They're not. And you know, oh, wow, we just got a 10 rating. I can go buy a new house. That's not really how it works. And especially when you're talking about, you know, rights at this level. One of the reasons why the NBA got the money that it got, one of the main reasons, wasn't even the league's viewership. And the league does well, you know, for all the nonsense that we hear about the NBA viewership. The league does very well. There's very few properties in all of television that get a million viewers on a regular basis like the NBA does. But the reason the NBA got that money in large measure is because of when the games are, right? It's Q2, the second quarter of the year. There's nothing else going on. And so the NBA soaks up all the advertising dollars during that period. Like, obviously, there's other considerations. I mean, has it not occurred to everybody to think about why in the world Thursday Night Football is on Amazon? Because none of the major networks wanted it. There was an NFL package recently that none of the major networks wanted. And I'll tell you, they would all get better ratings for Thursday Night Football than any of the Thursday night programming they air instead. It's not all just rating. And so you look at MLB and you say, well, MLB's ratings are right next to the NBA's. Okay, that's true. But ultimately, that's clearly not the only factor here, because the level of interest is so lukewarm that there's no rational explanation if you're only looking at the ratings. There's obviously other factors at play.
And once again, if not for the Apple and Roku deals, so many of the things that have happened subsequent to that would not be happening. And a lot of the conversations we're having about where MLB goes next, where MLB turns next, we would not be having. So much, in my opinion, has sort of snowballed because of those decisions, and they are still rearing their ugly head even as we speak.
Yeah, and we will see how that media rights negotiation plays out over the next few weeks. But that's going to do it for this week on the SMW podcast. Pretty light week, not a lot going on. So really just the college basketball ratings and the baseball. I will mention before we go the Alex Ovechkin game on Sunday, the big record-setting game, 905,000 viewers across TNT and True TV, one of the best audiences that TNT has had in the regular season, surpassed only by the Winter Classic. Pretty good turnout for a 12:30 p.m. NHL game on cable, I would say. But it was a 12:30 p.m. NHL game on cable, which means the previous day they got bigger numbers on ABC in that window. But hey, no, a great number, great turnout. And for WBD, another opportunity to get their name in those record books, right? They had LeBron's record-setting game a couple of years ago, Steph Curry's record-setting three-point shot. Good stuff for them, and a great call by Kenny Albert as well. All right. Well, Armand, thank you for joining me as always, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.